You're listening to The Broker's Terminal, a Mass Effect podcast. On this episode of The Broker's Terminal, we talk with Dr. Mick about his profession in therapy and how he translates it to gaming. Thank you for listening. This is The Broker's Terminal, a Mass Effect podcast. All right. Hello. Good evening for us, and I think late afternoon for you.
Yeah, we can say evening, 5 o'clock. Sure. We're good.
Yeah, sounds good.
I like it. Thank you for joining us. We're going to have you introduce yourself in a second because you don't even need to do that. But just want to say hello to all of our listeners. Welcome you to today's, whatever time it is of the day and when you're listening. We have a special guest with us. I do know that some people who listen to this podcast know who you are. We were actually in a Discord server the other day and someone brought your content up. And they were like, yeah, this dude is a therapist and he went through Mass Effect. And I, Lexi and I like digitally looked at each other like, hey, hey, this is great. This
hey,
is perfect.
Yeah.
Time. So yeah, we're going to jump right in. And who are you? What do you do? Et cetera, et cetera.
So I am Dr. Mick. I think that's pretty cool that some people that listen to your podcast already know who I am. So hello to those people. If you've watched my stuff, I'll give you the spiel I usually give people when they raid me on Twitch. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist in the states of Illinois and Nevada, and I have a PhD in human development, and I host a channel called Game Sessions with a Therapist, which is where I play cool games and talk about mental health, psychology, therapy, and more in an effort to destigmatize those things and bring information to people who wouldn't otherwise have it in a responsible and ethical way. And I've been streaming for about, going on almost 4 years now. And over the last 2 years, the channel pivoted to a direction that I think it led to what helped you guys find me, which is I do Let's Play content now where I will play through popular RPGs mostly, and I will use the content of the game to illustrate various psychological concepts, to talk about relationships, mental health. I make my own observations. I'll do a whole bunch of analyses. I'll interact with chat around stuff like that. And Mass Effect was actually, the trilogy was the game that I used to start that pivot and created. It was so popular that it actually led to me shifting the channel into what it is now. So I'm happy that you all found me, and I'm excited to be able to talk a little bit about it because it's been a little while since I did that playthrough.
Yeah, that's awesome. Somehow Lexi and I managed to talk about Mass Effect all the time, and at least twice a month we record ourselves talking about it. So
yeah,
thanks
and
for,
we're still going.
Impressive.
Yeah, so. Thanks for humoring us.
We just had our 1 year anniversary not too long ago. Yeah, so
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's been super fun. That's really, I didn't know that about your channel. It's I've known you for longer, not well, you know, I've known of you for longer than you've been doing that. I actually used to be involved with Guardians Mental Health.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I know Anxiety, and I think you've been on her show before too. So I've kind of like known of you and people all the time because I'm a therapist in the state of Florida, which are our listeners may or may not know. People all the time are like, do you know Dr. Mick? Do you know who this is? Do you know his stuff? And I'm like, I do. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I think professional therapists who create content kind of all run in the same circle, or at least know of different
know of each other. Sure.
Creators. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's really nice to be able to sit down and talk to you, certainly about Mass Effect because we're nerds, but also we'll ask some questions about just how you, you know, integrate therapy into Mass Effect and things like that. So I'm sitting here kind of like nerding out on both ends of the spectrum here.
Cool.
Yeah, so Lexi, anything before we jump
into like I said, I've just watched the first part of Dr. Mick's Mass Effect run. I'm 37 minutes into the second one. It's been kind of my background noise when I'm doing stuff. But I'm looking forward to it. I like it so far, especially like seeing that perspective. So I'm great. I'm glad to be here and chat with you and hear what you have to say. So yeah.
Yeah. So before we talk about Mass Effect specifically, excuse me, what is your relationship or your thoughts on therapy and gaming, both in the content that you create and also like if you're meeting with clients and they utilize gaming or they play video games, you know what I'm trying to get at with that question.
Yeah. I think there's a really rich intersection there that, in my experience, and this is not an indictment on fellow therapists, I think it's just the reality of the sphere that I'll say we work in, since you're also a therapist, is that most therapists don't play video games. And most therapists, in my experience, see video games the way that a lot of us gamers are afraid they see video games, which is as this time waster and something that is a form of escapism from problems rather than something that could be utilized for working through those problems. And for something that I have come across really my entire career, I've, for some context for your listeners, I have been a therapist for going on 10 years now. And I also am an approved supervisor. I worked as an assistant clinical professor of psychology for a couple of years before I retired and opened my own private practice with my wife. And I really noticed a lack of knowledge about what video games are. And there is such a richness to using them, one, as a way to join and build an alliance with clients who play video games. Two, I have used video games as intervention tools in therapy, which has I have seen some success with. And there have been other times where I will play video games with clients merely as a way to preoccupy them a bit so that they're feeling a little bit more comfortable talking. Like Minecraft is a really great game for me to just play with people. And it's amazing the barriers that come down when people are more in a world that they're comfortable in. So I've built a little bit of a niche in terms of working with people who play video games. Rarely are video games the presenting problem. It's usually other stuff. And then video games get used in the periphery as a means to connect and facilitate certain changes that a person wants to make. But there's a real richness there. I am not gung-ho on every therapist needs to understand video games because I realize that's ridiculous. But I do really advocate for therapists to understand video games as being more than what they are oversimplistically represented to be. And I used to do some writing about that and have a couple published articles about that. But that's kind of where I'm at with that. I think there's a real richness there. I also think it's something that you should really only integrate in therapy if you know what you're doing. I do think it's really stupid to just bring video games in if you're completely ignorant to it and act like you belong. So
Yeah, that's great. It warms my heart to hear you say that, certainly, because I fall in the same boat as you. I've had a handful of clients, certainly, in just, you know, the work I've done. In I currently work for a state agency, but I also have my own practice, and it's nice to connect in that way. And what you said about going into Minecraft, when I was in supervision, you know, to get my licensure, my supervisor said that he one time just like sat with his client while he played Skyrim. And the same thing, like he said, oh yeah, I utilize Skyrim to like collect flowers and it's like really relaxing. And when I heard him, he's like this guru here in the state of Florida, like everybody knows who this guy is. And
I think I know who you're probably talking about.
Oh, that's
about.
Great. His first name is Aaron. They're awesome. That's amazing. I love the counseling community. Anyway, sorry, I'm going to nerd out. I was like, if this guy can use video games in therapy, well, then I certainly can. You know, it's like I felt it was just really nice to hear it normalized. I felt like I was in therapy. I was like, wow, I've just been validated. This is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, cool. So, it's really nice. I agree with you. I would never like expect another therapist to know how to, or not know, but you know, to feel comfortable utilizing video games. But it's certainly nice when, you know, you can talk to another professional, not be looked at like, well, you're a therapist who plays video games. How professional could you possibly be? You know, so it's refreshing to at least A, I already knew that you were into that, but B, like be able to talk to you. It's really nice.
I have had to really push video gaming confidently and like carry that confidently with people. I think I get the benefit of the doubt from a lot of people just because of the range of identities that I hold, mostly being dominant. So it's very easy for me to kind of steamroll my way in and be like, hey, video games matter and people will listen to me. But I think that's an important part of what I do. I try to, I mean, I, this connects a little bit to how I introduced myself, and I think this might be helpful for people to understand a little bit, is like, one of the things that I've always pushed to try to do is make therapy more accessible to people and to make it seem, particularly to gamers, like it's a lot less scary than it is. And so one of the ways I'll do that is by, I mean, the way that I dress the same way when I do therapy as I do when I stream. It's a backwards baseball hat for anybody who is hasn't ever seen me before, in like t-shirts and tattoos showing. I have an N7 tattoo. One time I did therapy in an N7 t-shirt, and that actually like was an immediate join with a client, because they're like, what? My therapist is wearing a Commander Shepard N7 shirt? Are you kidding me? And I was like, yeah, you must play. And then it was just like immediate rapport.
Yeah.
So I think it's just really important to push for not even just video games. I mean, any other medium that a person might be familiar with, because like we have things like art therapy, and we don't really bat an eye at that anymore. And I do think that integrating video games increasingly with people who play them, since so many people play them, I think there's a real gold mine there. So it's cool to hear that that's also something that you do and something that you care about, because it really does allow us as therapists to bring some personality into the context and join with people in a way that, when you're a gamer and you meet a fellow gamer, there is an immediate kindred spiritness amongst you, and it's really a neat experience to have.
Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. Like, I know. It's like you wear the merch to, you know, you see something like, you know, sometimes I see people with the N7 sticker on their car, and I'm going, oh hey, or Star Trek, or any, you know, something that we're all familiar with. It's that. Yep. Immediate recognition. And you know, I have my N7 hoodie, I got the N7 tank top, really like it, you know, things like that. And you just wear them out in public, and sometimes you just get a look, and sometimes someone will actually approach and say hi. So it's definitely a neat little thing to have merch for that, and that to wear that with your clients too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as I don't know how old you are, Dr. Mick, but just based
32.
Well, oh my gosh, so am I. Look at this. This is like friendship made in heaven here.
I look like I'm 18, but I'm 32.
Yeah, people don't think I'm that age either. Though I did just have a baby, so I like gained like mom maturity, but not really.
That helps.
Yeah, it does. Go. Yeah. But I think that as people our age move into the profession as well, you know, some of that stigma and some of that you know, that's going to shift. It's going to transition, and I think it's going to become more popular, certainly too. So. That's great. Before we transition, I don't know if you've ever heard of this. You probably have, because you're, you know, smart and seem like you know the field.
So you think. Yeah.
So I think that's true. here there is a professional in the area who did Dungeons and Dragons with his clients, and he worked with kids, and it was very much the same. And that was actually my first introduction to Dungeons and Dragons, and he and I kind of didn't get along. We were kind of in weird spots in our lives, but that also kind of reminds me of gaming. It is very much like utilizing just that part of the brain, like that kind of creativity to elicit, you know, emotions and conversation that otherwise maybe wouldn't come out. So
I know that that's gonna what we're gonna talk about tonight, but I will say, just as to touch, that is one of the most amazing opportunities to be able to facilitate group therapy that there is, because you can make characters that you can load wishful identity into. You can play around with similarity identification. Like, there's all sorts of awesome stuff that you can do there and analyze group dynamics in a little bit less intensive a way than the Tavistocky kind of stuff that happens with groups. So that is really, really the fact. I really hope that more people start to adapt that, because a therapist DMing a raid with a group of people that are struggling with the same thing. Oh, is that cool?
It's powerful for sure. There's a training. You probably know what it is. I can't think of it, of course, because I'm on the spot, but it's like Geek Therapeutics or something. And there's like a training where you can like become certified in like geek therapy. And
I'm not familiar with that.
I can send you the info separately so you can see it. And it's kind of like, you know, it's a certificate. So, you know, certificates are so different across the profession, but it basically teaches you how to be a DM and provide that sort of group therapy to your clients and connecting with them in that realm. So I'll send you that info. Anyone listening, if you want that info, I can send it to you too. Cool. So with that, we can pivot into, again, this is just kind of broad, but, you know, Lexi and I can spitfire questions as you talk about it, but just sort of talking about what it was like to go through Mass Effect with the lens of a therapist, and so that, you know, people, you should watch 39 episodes of Dr. Mick, but if for some reason you choose not to, he can maybe TLDR it here.
I mean, podcast. From my perspective of being one and like a quarter of a way into the next episode, I would recommend it. It's good, you know, it's just nice. Even if you've played the games, you know, 10 or more times like myself as well, it's just nice to see someone else's perspective. And like I said, I was playing Sims and I had it on in the background. So, you know, it works. It's doable.
You should do it. This is not a reason to not do it.
Right. I think that's how a lot of people actually watch my content, is they will put stuff on in the background while they're preoccupying themselves with something else. I take no offense to how people watch my stuff. People watch it on 2x speed because they want to burn through it. That's fine. We were talking about this before we started, but my Mass Effect run is currently, at the time that we're recording this, is the longest playthrough on my YouTube channel. It is 39 episodes. It is long. The final episode 39 is like 6.5 hours because I was determined to finish 3 that night.
I get it.
But okay. So to answer your question, so my perspective on playing it as a therapist, I think there has to be a little bit of context around this because I have played through Mass Effect from start to finish 10 times, including the playthrough that I did on stream. The first time I played Mass Effect 1, I was a junior in high school when that came out in 2007. So I played through Mass Effect 2 came out when I was a undergrad at Purdue. And then Mass Effect 3 came out my senior year of my undergrad at Purdue. So I had like 1 or 2 playthroughs that I did of the game when I was in grad school, but that still was not like, and so my involvement in the game has changed over time, but I will say that me actually taking a very pointed approach at the game where I was like, I am literally going to wear my therapist hat while I play Mass Effect this time, was a total breath of fresh air because I know every nook and cranny of the game at this point. Like I know what's going to happen. I know what the different options are, yada, yada, yada. So this one was, I'm going to analyze what I see. I'm going to play the game much more as an observer as opposed to a role player as Shepard. Although obviously I have to make decisions on his behalf.
Sure.
And I'm going to just try to really connect not just the interpersonal dynamics that are happening, but like the wider dynamics systemically that are affecting the game and the characters as a whole. And for me, that was a totally different experience. And it was actually, it felt to an extent like I was playing the game for the first time. Mm-hmm. And there is such a, I mean, you two know this, obviously, anybody listening to this who cares enough about Mass Effect to listen to a Mass Effect podcast, which is awesome that there is, because Mass Effect is such a rich, wonderful world. And I love that. And I love that you guys do this, is that there is just such an amazing amount of world building that BioWare accomplished. And there is a level of consistency to the way that characters are written within their systems that makes sense. And despite being old, because playing through Mass Effect 1 is still a bit of a slog, despite the updates that they did in the Legendary Edition, it holds up in that regard. And I really admire the game for that reason. So being able to play it as a therapist was a really cool experience. And I will tell you both that one of the first times I ever did an intervention as a therapist with a game was with Mass Effect. And I can talk about that a little bit later on, sure. But that was still different than actually analyzing the game as a therapist. So it was a lot of fun to do that. And it got a really good response, which is why I pivoted my channel as a result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. I like I said earlier, I didn't realize that you even pivoted. I thought this was like content you made the whole time. But that's a testament to, you know, how you do it and that you're good at it and that it, you know, draws the attention that it gets. But I really like knowing that it was Mass Effect that did that. Liking that does nothing except make me happy. But that's really cool.
I think it's you know, again, we've talked about this on the show before where just a testament to the power around Mass Effect as a series and a fandom and, you know, a community of people and, you know, the voice actors, the writers, the devs, and so on, is that we can all use it as a basis for, you know, content creation and community and all these other fun things. Like, I used to cosplay when I was younger. I had an Ashley cosplay and a Shepard cosplay. I only had Ash armor because armor's hard. And, you know, met a whole bunch of people that I've now been friends with for 10 years. And, you know, we have this podcast that we've also been, we've been long-term friends before this too, because of Mass Effect and online fandoms. And, you know, I think it just speaks to how great a series is, not only for its story and the playability, but the way that it brings people together. And that just seems to be a consistent theme. You know, our previous guests, we've talked to some of the voice actors from Mass Effect Andromeda. We've talked to two folks from the Mass Effect Eventum, which is a tabletop RPG Mass Effect podcast. They're great. We talked to Tanaya and Emily. And, you know, again, it just this consistent theme of it all bringing people together, I think, is really, really awesome.
Agreed.
Fully agree. Well said. Lexi, here's the thing about our podcast, Dr. Mick, because I sit here and I make jokes, and Lexi has, like, these poignant thoughts, and I'm like, okay, whatever, this is fine. It's our shtick.
Love it.
The first question after that beautiful monologue that you gave is, do you play the same way every time?
No.
No, okay.
Variety man.
I figure.
Well, so as a rule in my, how do I want to put this? Because this is, it's funny because with Mass Effect, this is such, so much more of a complicated question.
Sure, of course.
Than it would be for any other game. Because I've played it through so many times. When I do playthroughs on my channel, I always do it as I make whatever decision I would make in that moment based on the analysis that I have.
Sure.
I will sometimes try to take into account the character's motivations if I'm playing something like that has actual defined characters. Shepard is a lot more hollow because you're supposed to project yourself into Shepard. So it's a little bit easier for me to like make those decisions as me, so to speak. The general way that I did it was the first time that I play an RPG, I always make the decision that I would make at that time. Mm-hmm. Like it, and I don't have any investment in going Paragon or Renegade. And then after I do that, that was when I went back and I was like, all right, let me see what pure Paragon is like. Let me see what pure Renegade is like. Let me play around and tweak a couple things. I did a run with a Shepard where I intentionally was like the worst leader in the entire history of Mass Effect. And like, he actually died at the end of two because he was just so terrible. I didn't do any loyalty missions. I tried to be antagonistic to every character. So I got to a point where, because I just enjoyed the game so much, I wanted to push its limits and see what it had to offer in that way. But in general, I enjoy games most when I make the decisions that I would make. And I think the most important thing about my run through the game, anytime I do a game, particularly on stream, is that I live with the consequences. And so if I make a decision that leads to something happening that I didn't want to happen, that's what happened. And I try to play it like it would be real life in that way, where I don't get to use the benefit of hindsight to change my decision. I don't take any offense to people who reload a save and do something else. I mean, it's a video game. You do what you want. For me, it's very important for me to immerse myself in what's happening so that I can make better decisions in the game. There are times where a decision that I make might lead to a consequence that to me doesn't make sense relative to the world that the game developers have created. But you know, to me, there's not a lot I can do about that. And that's fine. Even still, life works that way sometimes. So for me, it's just important to live with the consequences of my actions. If somebody dies on the suicide mission, they die on the suicide mission. I'm not going to resurrect them. If I miss a subplot or I miss a certain piece of armor that would have been really helpful to have or something like that, I am totally okay with that. I am fine with my game being incomplete. Although I would say that having gotten every single achievement in every single game and playing through it as many times as I have, I probably have seen everything there is to see in Mass Effect, but I really value living with the consequences of your choices.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would imagine that, especially as you're, you know, doing it in the lens that you're doing it in terms of gaming, you know, with a therapist, that probably ignites therapeutic conversation, I would imagine.
Yep.
Yeah, that's absolutely. It sure does. I mean, spoil the playthrough for people, but just in case they don't watch it.
it's a really great opportunity when you play games that way, whether it's Mass Effect or otherwise, to have really important conversations about accountability and mechanisms of reinforcement and how do you build distress tolerance for navigating consequences that you weren't anticipating? Because one of the things that I don't like sometimes about the shift from playing video games to real life is that video games give this sense that you can curate everything that happens to you and that you can overly exert influence on forces around you. And in life, that's not the case. So I try to make the video game experience as one-to-one as possible because it makes it a lot easier for me to illustrate certain concepts and talk about, yeah, that's a really disappointing thing that character just said, or that, you know, I just did this thing and I choose to sacrifice the council at the end of Mass Effect 1, and here's, in one of my playthroughs, I won't say whether it's in my actual playthrough for YouTube, but like I choose to do that. And then what happens? What happens if I pick Udina versus Anderson to lead the councils for the humans? Like maybe that goes in a direction we didn't like. Well, I don't get to necessarily erase that choice. I have to work with the variables I now have. And that means a different context with different things I have to pay attention to. And that sort of adaptability is something that, whether I'm working with clients or just navigating my own life, I think is a really important thing to build skill to be able to do and to manage more effectively. And if we don't give ourselves the opportunity to do that, we just keep reloading, we just keep going till we get what we want. I think it builds a sense of entitlement in the real world. If we're not careful, that is just not realistic.
That's amazing. And I'll go on the record as we're recording to say I'm totally going to use that with my clients, that analogy. And I appreciate it. I'm going to be like, I'm going to please go on YouTube and see this dude. And that's who I took it from.
Yeah. And, you know, like lately, just timing wise, and I recently purchased The Quarry, which is a spiritual successor to the Until Dawn game. It's very much a horror game, but it's about all your choices and little things having consequences of your actions. And I totally did a 100% blind playthrough. I did not look up anything. I didn't look anything up. I didn't read into it. In your first playthrough, they do have a death rewind feature that unlocks after your first playthrough, where you can save up to three people by rewinding. But you know, in my first playthrough, and I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, I would recommend it if you like horror and can stand it. In my first playthrough, I lost 2 out of the 9 counselors because one was that I didn't interrupt somebody, even though I thought she was in the right, and the other one was because I missed the QT shot thing I had to do, and it was all my fault. So I had to live with that. And, you know, I think that's the more realistic experience. And now I'm doing another playthrough with a friend where I'm streaming it to her and she's making all the decisions, even though I know what's going to happen, but she's made some different decisions than what I did. And I'm sitting here going, oh boy, we're going to see how that's going to turn out. But I think it's really great. And she also opted for no, I don't want the death rewind. We're just full sending. And I think that's a really good way to play a video game series, especially when you first play it, to just play it. Yeah. You know, don't just commit to it. Don't worry about your achievements. You can always replay it. And, you know, I can recall my first Mass Effect experience back in 2012. I got introduced to it by some online friends who really recommended it. And so I was in my freshman year of university, and every weekend I would come home to my Xbox, I would just binge it all weekend until I drove back. And, you know, I just played it as it is. And I did fairly well. Some things I had consequences for my actions. I don't remember what exactly they were. But, you know, it was such a great experience to just go into this world and just do things, you know. And I think that really does speak to the overarching theme of, you know, making choices in role-playing games. That's a really interesting perspective to look at.
The first exposure I ever had to that type of thing in a video game was through Mass Effect, but it was by proxy, which is my best friend, who at the time in 2007 loved Mass Effect probably even more than I did. He lost Rex on Vermeer, and he stuck it out through the trilogy. He never went back and reloaded. He stuck it out. He lived with the consequence. And at the time in 2007, that was like the most mind-blowing thing. I think the only game that had ever done something even remotely similar might have been like KOTOR. So it was like he was so profoundly disappointed by that loss. And I think still to this day, I can still rag, if he's listening to this, he's probably laughing, because I can still rag on him about it, because he stuck it through and was like, well, that's what happened. And another point that I like to make with people sometimes is video games create this culture around it too. And I see this a lot of times in comments to my videos, and particularly when there's moments where you have to make decisions, where people will use the benefit of hindsight to make judgments on certain decisions that they make. So if you see that you hit the right trigger to do a renegade option and it does a thing that you didn't want it to do, and then you go back and you play it again, or you watch somebody else play it and you go, well, that was a stupid decision because X thing happens. A lot of people do that because they think it makes them sound more intelligent, and it doesn't, because you're using something that you couldn't have possibly known a priori to make a judgment on that thing that was the precipice for what you learned in the first place.
Right.
The only way that hindsight is actually useful to us is when we use that to try to make an informed decision about something that goes on in the future. So if you see that you headbutt a Krogan and the Krogan respects you for it, then there's a good chance that you can use the benefit of that hindsight to make a better decision about how you might posture yourself to a Krogan later on in the game. And that's the good use of hindsight. A lot of us, we look at video games and we go, well, look how smart I am because I know what's going to happen. That's not how real life works. And I think that's why there's such a benefit as well to playing a game as blind as you can, because it allows you to immerse yourself in that. I am always thinking about how we can translate processes in video games to real life, because I think that's when they become intervention tools.
So. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm like keeping myself together here, but we're going to end this and I'm going to go in my room and be like, this is just so great. I can't do it. I'm going to be like processing it myself for a while. The whole theme obviously has been therapy, but I'm curious about the intervention that you spoke about that you were going to bring back up.
So obviously, I'll give the disclaimer. You probably could assume this, but I, for those who don't understand how this works, what I'm about to share is not a one-to-one of what actually happened. So I'm not going to identify anybody when I say this. This is not something that, like, I'm not going across any kind of ethical boundary in sharing this. I can keep it pretty benign. But essentially, I was working with an individual, and one of the main things that that person was bringing to therapy was this struggle to navigate a pretty impressively complex intersection of identity. And that person had struggled for most of their life trying to figure out essentially who they are, like what their values are versus what was told to them and all these things. And so that person was a gamer. It turns out that person was pretty invested in a Mass Effect playthrough that they were currently engaged in. And one of the things that we found out was that I asked him about his character creation, because obviously if we're talking about identity, let's talk about your character creation. And earlier I mentioned wishful versus similarity identification, and that's something that we see, wishful being traits you wish you had, similarity being traits you have that you idealize. And how much of those do you borrow from to create your characters in an RPG? Well, it turns out that all of the characters that he played as Paragon looked a certain way, and all of the characters that were Renegade looked a certain way, and that person did not realize that. They didn't make the connection, but when I pointed it out, there it was like, oh my God, there is this like subconscious bias towards certain traits that I have or don't have. So one of the things that we did was we created a character that had as much similarity identification as possible, that then was put into the game and made idealized decisions, essentially to try to boost that person's sense of self-esteem around the pieces of that their identity that they most align with and accept. And one of the things that I was finding is that there was this dissonance between the identity and the behavior, and this person was making certain decisions behaviorally that were in line with what they had been told about that aspect of their identity and the judgments that had been cast on them, instead of really digging deep and asking themselves, what does this part of identity mean for me? And how do I want to interact as a person that holds this identity? And it was this just very rich experience, because they'd come back every couple of weeks and we would talk about it. And it was like, oh my gosh, it was really difficult for me to make this paragon choice as this person that looked this way and pursued this relationship, because I just don't see that represented both internally and externally. And it expanded this person's idea of what was possible with some of the identities that they had been afraid to bring out despite being more authentic to their experience. So that was one of the first instances where, like, I really deeply wove a game in as an intervention tool as opposed to just playing alongside.
Yeah, obviously our listeners can't see me, but I'm over here just like shrugging and again, nodding. Like, I'll be crying and whenever we're done. That's amazing. I don't want to assume one way or the other, but for me, and once an episode, I say this, if I can speak for Lexi, I certainly know that we did, for example, in terms of identity, we did a Pride episode recently, and Mass Effect is obviously a good outlet for many people to explore that side of them. And then episode that we said this in our last episode, Lexi.
I think so, yeah.
That we'd like to explore is character customization, and just, you know, being able to, you know, create different, you know, looking people and things like that. So, you know, you're talking, and Lexi's very smart as well, so we're probably both thinking this certainly the same way, but as a therapist, I'm just like, oh my gosh, that is just brilliance, dude. You're like years ahead of me. I'm just sitting here like, I'm like a novice here. But no, that's truly amazing, and I'm taking notes, dude. I'm bowing down.
Cool.
This is amazing.
Yeah, and I gotta say, as a side note, I've paused on your video. You did get pretty good with your Shep to look like you. I'm looking at, like, it's, you know, for the character creation, I'm kind of like, you know, not bad. Like, it is limited, and dude Sheps are far harder to make.
Yeah. If you could put a backwards hat on and have some long hair, I think we'd probably be onto something.
There's probably a mod.
There's definitely a mod for Joker's hat, the SR2 hat, but it's not backwards, it's forwards. And I know there's definitely some longer-ish dude Shep hairs out there now, but...
I should have looked into that. I did not look into mods when I made it or when I played it. I really should have looked into that. Although I played the Legendary Edition, like, as soon as it dropped.
So they probably weren't out yet.
On your next one.
Number 11. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Right?
Go ahead, Lexi. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's really, again, like another testament to the ability to use that game to help with that. And I think, you know, with Shepard too, as you said earlier, being sort of that somewhat empty shell, like I always consider Shepard like half like canon character, half original character for every player, because every person has their take on Shepard. And yeah, there's the default Jayne and John Shepard that people jump right in and use, and that's fine. But I think, you know, a lot of us that Rachel's laughing at me because I'm very much pro custom Shepard. I think when you play a role playing game, I think you should take the customization and make a person, but whether that's, you know, a self insert or somebody else, whatever. But I think the customization is there. We should use it. Anyway, that's an aside. But I think that, you know, everybody kind of comes up with their take on Shepard and how, you know, they see them, you know, and for me, like, I have like a canon Shepard that was my first Shepard, and I play her, and I play her a very certain way. She's very much like 90% Paragon, but like by the end of ME3, she's tired of everybody's crap. Like, that's, you know, she's very done with things and takes those big renegade choices at the end with, you know, taking care of Udina herself, taking care of Lang, shooting the elusive man, and then ultimately choosing destroy, but like, she's done with everybody's shit. And
I would argue that destroys the Paragon decision, by the way, but that's a conversation for the other for another time.
Oh boy. We haven't yet done an ending episode, surprisingly, but know, it is on the roster.
Would you like to come back for that one?
Yeah,
if you guys want some fat community engagement around that, you talk about the ending. That gets people fired up.
Yeah, we're saving that for when maybe my son is not 4 months old and
we have time. Yeah. But anyway, my point being is that, you know, we fill that gap with Shepard and, you know, parts of us or creating a whole separate person as a character, you know, as a creator, a writer, an artist, whoever you are, or none of those things, but you just make a person that you follow along. And I think the other thing is too is the investment. We have three whole games where you're spending anywhere from at least 20 to 50 hours a game, depending on how long it maybe, well, for one and for sure longer because there's all the exploration, but even so with two and three, you're definitely putting in 30 hours. And so you're spending so much time with this one singular protagonist that you do build upon, and that's why people are very attached to them, and I am too. But I think it's neat that we get to be able to do that. And I was just going to pivot on to a brief question that came to mind in the middle of this podcast. But, you know, because you are a therapist, what would you think about, do you think Shepard should have had a therapist in the games throughout the whole thing? Because I feel like by the third game.
You guys can't see him, but he just made this phenomenal, like, oy vey smear, like this oy vey kind of face just then.
I've thought about this. It's a valid question. And I actually... I expected that you might ask me this question, and I it's still going to sound like I'm making it up on the spot. I'm going to give you the annoying answer first.
Oh yeah, yeah,
I think everybody could use a therapist.
That's so, not annoying.
That's not annoying. Right? That's
everybody could use a therapist.
Oh yeah.
There is any reason is a good enough reason to go to therapy. Now that said, I do think in Mass Effect 3. I appreciate that BioWare attempted to show the way in which the weight of Shepard's role, like the way that it was pulling him down.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, like, you start getting in. So a lot of people have asked me, does Shepard have PTSD? And the only way that I can answer that would be if Commander Shepard sat in my office and I talked to him directly and I did an assessment and determined that he had PTSD. Just because you could experience trauma without experiencing PTSD. PTSD is just a disordered response to trauma, and it's very rare amongst people who suffer from trauma, and you can actually have adverse effects from trauma without fitting that diagnostic criteria. Conversation for a different day. Essentially, Shepard, I think, probably could have benefited from it. At the same time, psychotherapy is a luxury. And I think with the world and universe imminently threatened by the Reapers in a way that needed consistent and constant action and leadership, I don't know that a therapist would have been seen by Shepard as a boon to his mission. I think in some ways a therapist at that point in time could potentially be an impediment. Because if Shepard is being asked to crack open the things that are happening to him and to really get into his stuff, he could potentially not be as ready to take action to fight the Reapers as in that point in time he needs to be. Mm-hmm. Like there is real... So I also, for your listeners, I also worked on the suicide hotline for 3 years when I was an undergrad. And one of the things I learned about crisis is that sometimes your psychological demons don't matter so much when you are in imminent threat and there's imminent harm, and the Reapers present that very much. Mm-hmm. So I think that Shepard maybe could have benefited from having somebody in his corner who is consistently reminding him that he's not crazy for having the perceptions that he has, that in a lot of ways, Shepard actually has more information than anybody else. And that can make you feel like you're on an island when you have that, because other people, I think, had every reason in the world not to believe him when he was talking about the Reapers. I actually have some sympathy for the world around him. We get a biased view on this because we're Shepard and we have an omniscient view on what's happening.
Sure.
Whereas the people around him, I don't think would have collectively been ready for that. I think the therapy part of Mass Effect would come in
after the ending when people are having to rebuild the universe.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
at that point, I can't even imagine having enough supply to meet that demand.
No way.
But that's where I actually really enjoy the communal aspect of Mass Effect, in the sense that the Krogan stick together, the Salarians stick together, the Asari are constantly sticking together despite trying to act like they're caring about everybody else. Like there's this very like primal and tribal aspect of the game that I think needs to be there, because that's a more realistic representation of what people do under widespread duress like that. So could Shepard have used a therapist? Sure. I don't know that it would have worked very well. And that's not because I'm defeatist on Shepard or because I believe therapy doesn't work. It's because it's just that was not the right
circumstances.
Context for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, or we could have had Kelly actually be more like a proper counselor on the ship, rather than like, whatever she was supposed to be.
Yeah, every once in a while, Yalman, too, I get people who harass me. Lexi has joined just to pick me off, but I get people who are like, yeah, Kelly was that therapist in Mass Effect, right? And I'm like, Kelly wasn't a therapist. What are you talking about? I would never feed someone's fish. But yeah, so yeah. I actually, as soon as you started speaking, I thought to myself, you know, I think Shepard would have been able to make choices that they made if they're in therapy. Because I've been in therapy. And in therapy, Rachel doesn't make the same crappy, you know, like big decisions as not in therapy, Rachel. So
you really don't.
Yeah, you don't.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Okay. It's one of those things where, like, Shepard has to be decisive.
Mm-hmm.
Shepard, whether he wants it or not, has been placed in a role where he has to make hard decisions with limited information at key points in time that have massive ripple effect ramifications no matter which decision he makes. And do I think that it might be helpful to have something on the side that might help him keep this sense of clarified mind to not buckle under that pressure in a given moment so he can actually make the decision? Yes. But I do think therapy perhaps would serve a role where he might micromanage some of his decisions more than would be to his benefit in a given moment, where maybe he does need to make the quick trigger pull renegade decision that if he's in his prefrontal cortex a bit too much in those moments, he's not going to do, and he's going to second guess, and it actually creates more problems. So this is where I desperately wish the public at large would understand just how complex therapy and psychology is.
Yeah.
It is not as simple as, and I understand that this is not a simple issue either, but it's not as simple as high blood pressure, limit diet, take medicine, good to go. Like, psychology is so less quantitative than, because the brain is just not a thing that we can particularly quantify, that these things don't have simple answers. And there are times where therapy is what's called contraindicated in certain situations where it might not actually be useful to Shepard given the demand of the circumstance. And it makes for very interesting conversation.
Yeah, sure. That was a great question, Lexi. Again, per usual, I'm over here asking, like,
well, like I said, I was just thinking about it because, you know, like, I think with my Shepard, and I just speak to like the different background choices. I wish we had a little bit more involvement other than like one side quest in the first game and like every person mentioning, oh, you lost your whole unit on a coup. It's like, gee, thanks for reminding me.
I know, right? Everybody loves to remind Shepard of his trauma.
I know.
Right. So like my Shepard, she was a colonist. So not only did she lose her entire family and became an orphan at 16, but then was also, I chose Soul Survivor because I guess I'm just a masochist, I guess. So then that's losing her entire unit of, what, 49 other Marines because of Cerberus. And, you know, I just think that, like, going with that knowledge with Shepard in the background, that's just, and you can make the case for all the other backgrounds, too, that they have that, all of them have some form of early trauma and then subsequent trauma for being a soldier and going through all these different things. And, you know, and arguably people, there's partly the protagonist armor or complex of, you know, they go through these things, but they just go through them. But I think it's always interesting to think about, like, what they could have done, like, again, with Kelly, like, what they could have had maybe is something for, like, someone for Shepard to talk to, even in that circumstance, because with Mass Effect 2, that was like them going on a suicide mission, knowing that they probably weren't going to make it out of it alive. But then they just kind of had her there as like a, oh, I think, you know, I think everybody's hot and I'll feed you fish if you're nice to me. Like,
terrible therapy. But also, you know, again, like I couldn't go on a suicide mission if I was in therapy. That'd be terrible decision making. And my therapist would probably help me realize that. So, yeah, I totally get it. I had a great question. This happens to me when I'm with my clients. I'm like, I don't know. I was going to ask you something, and now it's gone. And
the happens to me too. You're not alone.
That's great. The train has left the station.
Yeah. So I think maybe the only other question I have that is kind of related to your playthrough, but I'm curious if you have ever considered, if you've played Andromeda, and if you would consider doing the gaming with a therapist for Andromeda, if it would sit the same. Do you think it would have the same, no pun intended, effect?
I have played Andromeda. Or I should say I have attempted to play Andromeda 3 times. I have never finished it. I considered playing Andromeda on stream after the trilogy, because I thought if there was ever a way that I was going to get through Andromeda, it would be for me to play it on stream and do it in the format that I currently do it, because I do think that there is some pretty cool stuff in there in terms of like family legacy and people having to walk into the precipice of novelty and all this stuff. Like, I do think the problem that I have with Andromeda is it's kind of a personal problem to do with me, which is that BioWare was fighting a losing proposition by going to Andromeda in the first place. Because one of the things that I don't know that they realized they were going up against is actually our own, and I'm saying our own in terms of like humans, every single one of us, our own limited psychology and representation. Because when you bring in the idea that you're going to go to another galaxy, not just another system within the same galaxy, we're literally going to Andromeda. The problem is the human brain can only create new things that are built from things it already knows exist.
Sure.
So when you show up in Andromeda and then everything is bipeds with guns and armor and hierarchical structures that are similar to humans, to me, that's boring, because you went to Andromeda. First planet you land on might as well just be Earth with floating rocks. And to me, that's like, oh, it was like such a letdown. So that's very hard for me to push through, because for me,
yeah, fair enough.
The ultimate proposition of Andromeda, the ultimate proposition from a psychological perspective is, what would it be like for a massive group of people on a ship to go to a place where everything they know and sense is going to be at odds with what they're experiencing? And I don't think you can cultivate that in a video game. It's too big.
Yeah.
So that's a hard one for me. I think, could I do it? Probably. Would it be a decent run? I think it probably would be. I would have to be in this thing where I'm like, I got a hankering for Mass Effect and I don't want to play the trilogy again. So let me jump into Andromeda. And the pacing on the game kind of hurts it a little bit too for me. So.
Sure.
It's a struggle for me. No, I want to love the game.
Yeah, we're very big Andromeda sympathizers here, but that is probably one of
which is fair.
Yeah, no, that's one of the only arguments I've heard that I'm like, no, totally, I absolutely like.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, because it's like, it's not just like, oh, they had bugs at the start, or oh, Riders not, you know, Riders inexperienced, and Riders not Shepard, and all these other things that are just kind of, that's actually like the most valid argument for making it difficult to get into, because you're right, because we, you know, as BioWare, as creators, are only making, you know, something that they kind of already know, and not jumping off to make things that we don't know. You know, they have to have a basis somewhere, and how can you, right?
That said,
yes,
it is in contrast to something really cool that they did with One, which is they actually kind of did that.
That's
like
true.
The Elcor having voice modulation and having to say their feelings and their experience before they say the thing they're going to say.
So great.
That is an incredible novel idea. I've never seen that in anything else. The Elcor are the coolest thing ever. The fact that the Hanar communicate the way that they do, where you have to have this translator that takes the bioluminescence and somehow turns it into light. I mean, that kind of stuff is really cool. And there's none of that in Andromeda.
And not to mention like the sort of like what's the word? Sci-fi horror background, like the little tiny things that you would find on the planets, like the Prothean artifacts or just the other spooky little crap that they had that you would only find if you scanned every single planet, which I've done. And it's going like the sci-fi horror and you're like, whoa, what is this? And you know, you kind of get that a little bit with the Leviathan DLC in 3, but not the whole other thing. And I realize there's a lot going on in that game, but they didn't keep to that sort of originality in 1. And I think, you know, Andromeda was also kind of what they wanted to do with 1 in terms of graphics that they were limited to in 2007 and the exploration aspect. I love both of those for that reason. And that's why I think I'm fine with Andromeda. I mean, like because it was so pretty, like it was just like, whoa, this is stunning, you know, for the time that it came out, to see how they improved upon that. But yeah, so that's fair.
I could talk for 2 hours about the stuff with Andromeda that they could have done differently that would have just made the game absolutely mind-blowing, but okay. I'll
have you back for the endings, yeah. And then we'll have you back for the Andromeda conversation. So I think, unless Lexi, you have any other questions, I'm going to pivot to just tell people where to watch your stuff.
One in the game was my big one, but that's pretty much all I got.
You know what? So. Before you tell about yourself, I'm going to tell a small anecdote about Lexi's question. So when I was in grad school, and you probably experienced this as well, I had to record myself, you know, doing therapy. And very early in one of my practicums, I was not seeing real people. I was just like, hey, friend, can I do fake therapy with you? Which looking back on was cringy. But I had a friend who helped me as her shepherd, and I was some, like, I'm like a Cerberus fangirl, so I was like some Cerberus therapist. I know, look at his face, he's like, what? And so I'm Cerberus ME2 fangirl, ME3, all right, we can move on. I brought that recording in, and I explained, like, yeah, this is my friend, and I'm acting as this, and this poor practicum professor was like, is this person okay? Like, is this woman okay? And I was like, yeah, she's acting as a video game character. And he's like, are you sure? Because she was really putting on a show, and I could not, he was like 70. I like could not communicate to him what was happening. And I was like, I think she's
fine. I don't
remember
a battle on a coups.
Yeah. I was like, she's really fine. But he was like, oh, okay. Just give me an update next week. I was like, my goodness. Like, he was really concerned. So shout out to her for her performance. But Dr. Vic, where can everybody find your stuff?
So you can find my playthroughs if you want to binge watch them, as you may now that, I won't go into what Netflix is doing. But if you want to binge my content, you can go over to my YouTube. It's youtube.com/DrMick. I've got the Mass Effect playthrough as well as many other playthroughs that I have episodes coming out. I release many videos a week, so you could keep up. There's a lot to binge there. If you ever want to catch me live, I have a really incredible community that is built around my stream. Admittedly, my hours are not conducive to the majority of people that live anywhere except for like Australia, but I stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/DrMick, and I stream usually 9:30 p.m. Pacific time, Tuesday through Sunday. I usually take Mondays as my day off. I'm on pretty consistently. It's pretty rare for me to cancel streams unless there's something anomalous going on. You can follow me on Twitter at DrMickLive. And you can follow me on Instagram at DrMickLive. And you can also follow me on TikTok at DrMickTok, DrMickTok. I will give a quick plug for my TikTok, because if you're listening to this and you haven't heard of me and you're like, okay, how cool could his playthrough actually be? How much did he actually pause? I encourage you to go to my TikTok page and scroll down, and you will find Mass Effect clips that are a really awesome window shop into what the playthrough is going to be like. I will give you a forewarning that if you watch my content and Let's Plays, whether it's live or whether it's on YouTube, I pause the game a lot. My first and foremost point of playing games is to illustrate psychological concepts, to educate people. I am not playing games so that I can exploit them. I'm not trying to make the most money possible in Red Dead Redemption 2. I'm not trying to 100% complete all the games and turn every stone over. I am using the games as an educational vehicle. So if that sounds cool to you and you think maybe you could learn a little something about yourself by consuming that content, by all means, come hang out with us. I also have a Discord that you'll find in the descriptions of my YouTube videos or in my Twitch that you can join, where we have conversations offline. There's actually a Mass Effect channel in my Discord where people can talk about the playthrough and certain things that are going on in the game. And I would love to, if anybody's listening to this podcast, would I shouldn't say that. That's a weird way to say that. Anybody who is listening
it's okay,
to this
I'm
podcast,
not offended.
because I know you have listeners, anybody who it's just us just chatting, anybody, those of you that are listening to this podcast, if you are looking for a cool place to hang out that is very well moderated and doesn't really allow any riffraff, I take quality over quantity 100% of the time, then my stream is a place for you to hang out, and we'd love to have you.
Awesome. Yeah, I will make sure that we include your links and everything when the video goes up on YouTube. Lexi, I am so far behind. And we post everything to Anchor, and I'll make sure your links are there too. But thank you so much. This was so great. And sounding like a fangirl, I'll do this as professionally as possible. I would love to, you know, connect professionally and communicate that way, if that's okay. Sure. Just because
that is fun.
I think there's power in nerd numbers, and it would be really cool to just communicate in that way, so I appreciate that.
By all means.
It's like asking someone out on a date, right? Like, feels so weird. Someone said that to me.
I know, it's cool. It's like, professional connection. I'm sitting here like a third party.
Just
like,
own it. Yeah. I know. Absolutely.
I was doing
build your network.
It was, oh, my cousin called me yesterday, and he was like, can I come up and like meet your son? And he was like, this sounds like I just asked you on a date to like meet your kid. I was like, okay, let's end this right now. So cool. But thank you so much for coming on, and you are welcome back anytime.
Yeah, it was awesome to have you, and thank you.
It was lovely to meet the both of you. I appreciate that you reached out to me and that you were patient with me and how long it took me to respond to you. And by all means, yeah, I mean, if you guys ever have an episode coming up that you're trying to do and you're interested in having me join and talk about something specific or whatever, by all means, hit me up. I can talk about Mass Effect for hours.
Surprisingly, so can we.
Us How about too. It? Yeah, neat.
If you liked this podcast, please rate, like, and comment on your platform of choice. To show further support, you can follow us on Twitch, Twitter, and subscribe to our channels on YouTube. Everything discussed today will be archived on the Broker's Terminal. After all the galaxy secrets are at the Shadow Broker's fingertips.